right, 36 past the hour on the first day of December. We welcome in a guy that is really, really busy. He's got the tracker going on. It's follow season. He's introducing himself to coaches that he never thought he would ever research. It is Parker Gabriel from the Lincoln Journal-Star. Is in your world, in the newspaper world, is this an enjoyable time when you have to do all of this kind of stuff? When you're basically chasing down rumors and
question. Enjoyable isn't always like the first word that comes to mind, but it is fun in some ways. I mean, there's a little more sleuthing, a little more, it's just the job changes pretty dramatically from the ins and outs of covering the season and the structure of it to being entirely unstructured and not really knowing what's going to happen on a day-to-day basis.
Do you think there is a lot of movement going on? Do you think this is a process that is going pretty quickly?
Yeah, I do. I mean, not going quickly enough for some people.
True.
But I do think there's a lot happening. And it's a multi-level operation, too. It's not just about trying to nail down a wide receiver's coach and find an OC and figure out, special teams or whatever. There's also guys that are making decisions about whether to go to the NFL or stay in college for another year. There's, you're recruiting high school kids and transfers, and you're trying to get the head coach out to see recruit and interview coaching candidates, some of whom are still coaching this season, and talk with kids about what their future looks like. And so there's a lot going on. There's a lot of moving pieces, and that stuff takes time, even if in an ideal world you'd have it all sorted out and be off and running.
Do you think it's an advantage or disadvantage that all of a sudden when you get to your season ends, so now it's all of the attention is putting four new faces on your staff. Advantage or disadvantage that the college football world kind of just blew up and staffs are changing rapidly. Guys that thought they had jobs don't have jobs. Guys are going places where they didn't think they were going. Advantage or disadvantage to a place like Nebraska that has four spots to fill?
Well, I think, I guess it just depends. I hate to sound like it's too much like outcome driven. It depends a little bit on how close they were to having everything settled before the last couple of days. It's so interesting. Like, there's a situation. I'm literally only using this name as an example. I don't want people listening to like take this and run with it. But like, suddenly a couple of days ago, Mike Bobo, Auburn's offensive coordinator, was let go, and there's just a guy who has like years and years of experience. Yeah. Who's suddenly on the job market that maybe people in the business knew was going to be, maybe if it was a surprise, and that's just like, that's happening over and over and over again, not just with places where the head coaches change, but in places where staffs are affected by the fact that head coaches have changed other places or whatever. So it's all of this puzzle, and the pieces are nowhere near set. The music is nowhere near stopping in terms of coaches and people and now players too, obviously moving all around the country. And so it's one challenge to get your pieces in place. It's going to be another challenge to keep the pieces, whether you've had them for years or weeks, in place all the way till August or May or whenever in the future. So I think it's potentially an advantage. I think there are reasons to believe that Nebraska can have success recruiting, especially out of the portal, in the coming weeks. But some of that is going to be dependent on how the offensive staff shakes out over the next, few days or week or couple weeks.
We've done the assistant coach wish list. We've looked at, we scoured the portal, and there are plenty of, I guess you would say, impact players that are in the portal. But the sense of urgency for Nebraska to kind of win the offseason with free agency, if they're getting a guy out of the portal, and Torre turned out well, Kolarvik and Johnson and Stepp were at a different level, how many guys do you think, Parker, that Nebraska needs out of the transfer portal that need to be quote-unquote impact guys, play for conference honors, be an immediate starter, How many of those guys do you think are needed?
I think if you're talking about starters, I would say probably at least two or three. I mean, if you want to put specialists involved, I guess you could push the number higher than that. I think they need a tackle. They might need two offensive linemen, especially, you know, if Cam Durgan ends up going to the NFL, which no decision that we know of on that front, but could go either way. I think you could use two on the O-line alone. You probably need a starter somewhere on defense, although, you know, I think a veteran safety would help solidify that group. I don't know, you know, August is a long way away. I don't know that it's entirely necessary. They have some young guys they like there. But somewhere on defense, you probably need one. And then for sure, you know, you're talking about special teams. And then there's a couple areas where you'd like to, you know, if you can find a real difference maker at receiver or running back, you know, or tight end, shoot. I mean, I think you could see that. And then quarterback, obviously, is a big wild card at this point.
Tied in quick, you commented on Juergens, who has the option to put his name into the NFL draft. You know, today he gets third team All Big Ten. Travis Vokolek, your inkling says returning for 22 at tight end?
I think so. I think it says something that, you know, he's a fifth-year guy who didn't walk on senior day. Now, that's not necessarily a perfect representation. All of those guys that walked is like, if you walk, you're going. If you didn't, you're staying. There's decisions to be made in there. But, look at the year Austin Allen had, and obviously Austin's a really talented player. He's named the tight end of the year in the Big Ten today. But I kind of want to crack at being the top guy in this offense, and especially, you know, Travis Vokolek is a better blocker at this point in his career than Austin Allen is. So if you could add, you know, if he's got a 35-catch season, I mean, if that's the type of player he is next year, that's a pretty valuable commodity in the NFL.
All right, design for me, knowing what you know about the running back room, and Marvin Scott departs, Morrison has departed, but everybody else that is in it has eligibility to return, and you get a Johnson, you get an Irvin, you get a Step, you get a Yant, you get a Belt, you get a Hayes that you'll have to figure out when he joins out of high school where he's going to be used at. And you now are using past history in the running back room. Design for me the ideal coach to come into that running back room. What you think that running back room needs out of their position, coach?
Man, that's a good question. I think at some point you want a tactician. You know, you want someone who can teach the finer points. But at the end of the day, like, with running backs, like, you know, you just have to have the baseline ability to do it. I mean, guys get comfortable in systems and all of that, but I think you're looking for someone to help fine-tune, because at the end of the day, like, if you're a running back, like, you've got good vision. That can be taught to some degree, landmarks and just the sort of philosophy of the offense and what you're going through and how your steps lead you to, you know, your landmarks and your reads and all of that. But at the end of the day, I mean, you need someone who is going to help just from a small detail standpoint and from a mentality standpoint. And then you need someone in that room who, you know, can communicate the run scheme, the blocking scheme clearly. And you want someone, frankly, who can attract and land impact talent in the backfield because, you know, Nebraska, I've said this before, I mean, I think they're set up okay going forward. Ramir had a nice year. They like Gabe Irvin, obviously. Yant and Steph both showed flashes of what they can do. But, man, I mean, look around the Big Ten, look around the country. Yeah. There's a lot of really good running backs out there, and Nebraska's got to find that kind of caliber of running back play, you know, in 2022. They don't have a lot of time to wait to get to that level.
Can they, and there's a little bit of the running back, a little bit of the mentality with the position coach, but can Nebraska get to a point, Parker, where they do have a number one running back that people are ready to admit it out loud? Yeah, he's our number one running back. He's number two. He's number three.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Ramir was making a case for that. Ramir Johnson was making a case for that before he got hurt and missed the last couple of games. you know, the question is he that guy over the course of an entire season or two seasons or whatever? Maybe he is. But if he makes the kind of jump from right now to next year that he made last offseason, hey, he's got a chance to be pretty darn good. But I think, you know, I guess the best bets on the roster right now would be him or Urban, assuming Urban's fully healthy. Not to say it would be impossible for Yance or Marquis Step to be that guy, but I guess I would bet right now that it'd be Johnson or Urban, or the other possibility is that someone who's not on the roster right now. So that's a big, you know, there's a lot of questions right now about who is going to be the offensive staff, who are going to get those jobs, who's going to fill out those jobs. Then the cascading questions after that begin about what do they think, what do those coaches think about the talent in their rooms, about what they have to work with, about the connections that they might have with players that are in the portal or, you know, what have you. So I think there's a lot of uncertainty on the offensive side of the ball right now, beginning with the fact that they still need to hire those coaches. But that's only the first layer of decisions to make this offseason.
What, you play quarterback coach for me. You now watch tape of Logan Smothers. What did he show you Friday that you look at and go, okay, this is what we can work with if he wants to work with us?
Yeah, I think it's funny. I understand to some degree why the coaches, you know, have the reactions they do when you ask about the same guys all the time. Because I thought that he played largely the way he'd been described. Gamer, he makes quick decisions, he gets the ball out of his hand, he doesn't hang on to it for too long. For the most part, he gets the ball where it needs to go. Doesn't have the biggest arm in the world, but, you know, he handled everything pretty effectively. He was, you know, calm, cool, and collected, seemed confident. The turnovers in the fourth quarter obviously are killer. And he's a willing runner. He's obviously, you know, he's got speed, he's got some burst. I think he surprises people when he turns the corner, because he's turned the corner a bunch of times, even in limited playing time. The big thing for me is there's no quarterback in the Big Ten, whether it's Logan Smothers or Adrian Martinez or anyone else, who you can reliably call his number in the run game 24 times.
Yep.
So it was a little bit of an outlier for me, just in the sense of, like, it was coached and called and handled at the quarterback position like, hey, we're just trying to win one game here.
Yeah.
I don't think they could really use him like that over the course of a full season. But look, I mean, I think he did enough to at least make the, I mean, he didn't win the starting job in 2022 or anything like that. But I think he showed enough that he can be a factor in Nebraska's quarterback room going forward.
Your thoughts on what happened in Ann Arbor on Saturday and then what will happen in Indianapolis on Saturday?
I just thought Michigan was really impressive. And they have been all year. That's the thing. It's just you view Michigan through this lens of Ohio State. And so it was like you thought you knew and you thought you knew and you thought you knew. And then Michigan State was like, man, are they just going to lose to the same teams they always lose to? But that was an anomaly, really, the way that fell apart on them in the fourth quarter against the Spartans, because they're big and powerful. You know, the guys who were the most impressive in Lincoln when they were here were their backs and their tight ends. And then obviously the defensive front. But offensively, you know, Haskins and Corum, they don't get talked about as in terms of like the elite guys. And neither do All and Schoonmaker, the tight ends. Mm-hmm. But man, those guys, you know, along with the offensive line, they make that offense go. And then McNamara does a good job with what he's asked to do. I don't know. I can't imagine there's many pass rush duos out there that are better than Hutchinson and Ajabo. I mean, those guys are really good. They're dangerous. I don't know what the line is for Indianapolis, but I think, just having seen both of them this year, I think they're quite a bit better than Iowa. That doesn't always mean much when you play against Iowa, but that's what it looked like to me. And I think Michigan's a real playoff threat. You know, I do. If they get through Iowa, I don't think anyone else that's fixing to make the playoffs is going to be real excited about seeing the Wolverines in the semifinal.
Yeah, I think they can, I mean, just like they did against Ohio State, they ran right into the teeth of the defense, and they said, this is what we're going to do. And I like their pass rush. If they are matched up against that Georgia front seven, I don't think they'll back down and all of a sudden get away from what their identity is. And they leaned into their identity this year. One quick thing, because I'm curious, because you brought up when Michigan played in Lincoln back in early October. In your opinion, who's the best team Nebraska played this year at the time that they played them?
Oh, man. At the time they played them, probably Michigan. You know, I thought, I mean, that was just a really good game when they were in Lincoln. I was thinking, as I was watching Michigan and Ohio State on Saturday, I was actually thinking, like, the things that won Michigan that game in Lincoln are the same things that won them the game against Ohio State.
Yeah.
And conversely, I thought the things about Ohio State that allowed Nebraska to stay in that game when they were in Lincoln are the same things that got them beat.
Great
against
point.
Michigan in the game. And so I thought it was sort of interesting. I thought I didn't have a, you know, the way Twitter is, I didn't have a good way, and maybe I'm not doing a good job of it right now, I didn't have a good way of putting it into a nice snappy tweet, but I thought that both Michigan and Ohio State looked on Saturday like they looked at Memorial Stadium this year. That was a good thing for Michigan and a bad thing for Ohio State.
I agree. That's a great point, and I'm nodding my head in agreement. Parker, as always, I appreciate it. Good luck with tracking and all of that kind of stuff over the next 48 hours.
Yeah, thanks. You got to get the flight. You know, Santa's coming too, so you get the flight tracker and you find Santa and you find a, you know, coach or recruits or whatever. So we'll see what happens.
Hey, thank you.
Yep, have a good week.
That's Parker Gabriel from the Lincoln Journal Star. We made it through another day. I thought we'd get to December 1, at least we'd have something. At least we'd have something. The Mickey Joseph recruiting for LSU, it's admirable. He's doing his job. Okay, he's still employed by LSU. He's doing his job. I mean, he could be retained at LSU, and he wants the particular prospect that the, you know, the picture that is all over Husker Twitter. And that he's just doing his job. You know how quickly that changes? Hell, Brian Kelly was in a recruit's house, and he got the LSU job. Okay, a coach could be in somebody's house, walk out to their vehicle, take a phone call, say, go to the local sporting goods store, find a Nebraska polo, or we're going to FedEx it to you right now with a new phone, and tomorrow you are recruiting in person. And you know what they do before they go in person? They pick up the phone and they start calling. It's a wild business, but it can change just like that. Again, Brian Kelly was in a recruit's house, and all of a sudden he went from Notre Dame coach to LSU coach. It's got to be a 30 for 30 on what the reaction was in the home. Like, did you know that he had all of a sudden switched jobs while he was talking to your son? All right. Great show as always, everybody. Thank you. Big thanks to our guests, Scott Shanley, Robin Washit, Parker Gabriel, our good friends over at Oscars on the mailbag, and congratulations to our winner. Tomorrow, we'll do a little fantasy football. We'll have Jacob Padilla, who I think is drunk. Jacob doesn't drink, but I think he got drunk last night after the Suns won again and they dominated the Golden State Warriors.
He's a very happy man.
Yes, he is. And we'll have a Nebraska basketball game to talk about. Huskers and the Wolfpack tonight in Raleigh as part of the Big Ten ACC Challenge. For Josh, I'm Gary. We're back again tomorrow at 10 with another edition of the Gary Sharp Show on 1620 The Zone.